All right. Hi, all. This is a panel on how not to get into the game industry. And my name is Ilanka Dunnan. I am the general manager of online community and executive producer at Simutronics Corporation. I've been making computer games since about 1990 or so. And so I've seen pretty much all sides of the industry, ranging from hiring to technical writing to game production, artificial intelligence programming, except art. I suck at art. Never ask me to do art. And so that's kind of a quick introduction of me, and now I'll go on to the panel because I'm not even sure who's here. So,
I'm Carrie Beagle. I work for Stardock Entertainment, probably most known for Galactic Civilizations 2. I worked on all the Gals of 2 games, or Gals of games for Windows, and the Political Machine.
I'm Joe Levinsky. I am the U.S. Product Quality Assurance Lead for Funcom in Durham, North Carolina. Before that, I worked at Red Storm on all the Ghost Recon games in Product Quality Assurance.
Hi, I'm Nathan Hanisch. I've got considerably less experience than Ilanka. I've been doing game programming for about 6.5 years. 4 of those years at Mutable Realms working on the Wish MMO. 1 year working at Electronic Arts where I shipped The Godfather and the last James Bond game. And now I'm working basically the serious game side for Northrop Grumman as a senior engineer.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's going to be a very informal panel, so if anyone has a question, feel free to ask. But I guess I'll start off with pet peeves in terms of, I think all of us probably have war stories about when we were hiring people and had people just kind of come in and we knew within 5 seconds, absolutely not. One of my pet peeves, I'll say, is when I talk to people maybe at a conference or maybe we've had a classified ad and I ask someone what their experience is and they say, well, I play a lot of games. Okay, not going to get you points. We have a lot of people that want to get into the game industry, and speaking for Simutronics, where we create games and we also create engines that other people use to build their games, and we really want people who already know their stuff. We want people who are already trained. We want people who can hit the ground running. So that's my first war story. On to you.
One of the things we always joke about at Stardock, like on a daily basis, is this commercial. It's a couple years old now. I think it's from Westwood University. And there's these two guys, and they have, like, you know, console controllers. And they're like, you know, hurry up, the boss is coming. And she comes in, have you guys got that game done yet? I have 3 more games I need designed. And, like, they're sitting in front of a TV. Yeah, I just need to tweak the graphics a little.
And their plan is what they're doing is their plan, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just completely nothing like the game industry, but people actually think that that's how it is.
Right.
And so, I mean, they come in and they just have totally unrealistic expectations.
Right, yeah. I see people all the time. They think that they want to get a job at a game industry, and that means that they're going to be able to sit around and play games all day and not actually have to do any work ever. And then the company somehow is going to release a hit game, mm-hmm. and their name is going to be on it as in the credits as something important, like head designer or something, even though they've never written a design document, never written any code, never done any art. But they think that's what it's like to work in a game company. Somehow the work just gets done magically.
Oh, and I have lots of ideas.
Yeah. But I'll tell people right up front, there are no entry-level positions for senior game designers. Okay? Okay, next.
But the standard entry-level position is product quality assurance.
Yeah, QA and.
At Red Storm, they hire through a staffing agency, so often that's a good way to get started in product quality assurance.
And customer service.
And CS, too. But yeah. I don't know if CS necessarily gives you many many industry skills. You know,
it's dealing with customers.
Customer service is the same everywhere, whether it's at AT&T or a game company. Just kind of.
I'll argue that. It depends on the company. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, QA is a definite, excellent entry level. If you want to go into a company entry level, QA beta testing is an excellent shot.
I've always dealt with these questions from the 180 degrees. How do you get in? how to not get in? I'll definitely agree with Ilanka that you talk to a lot of people, you see a lot of resumes from people who have stars in their eyes and have no real technical skills whatsoever. Carrie and I were talking just before the session that, you know, in order to get a certainly technical job, you've got to be able to prove to somebody I can build something that actually works and is non-trivial and prove it to somebody who knows what it means to do that. Let's just keep going.
I've talked to people in the television industry who are script writers, and they say that if you want to get a job, work like Steven Sears, who's done some of these scripts for the Hercules and Xena television shows and several others, and he says the way to get in the industry if you want to be a script writer is to write a script for a current show, but don't send it to the producers of that show. Send it to the producers of some different show. So, for example, if you wanted to get a job writing scripts for, say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, then you could write a script and maybe send it to, I don't know, the Stargate producers or someone. Because if you send a script on a show to the people who really know the show, they're going to pick it apart. They're going to see all the mistakes in it, and they're not going to be impressed. But if you send it to some other show, they'll see, oh, here is someone who can write, who can start a project, work on the project, and finish the project. And I would say the same thing goes in the game industry. If you want to get a job in the game industry, write a game. I know it sounds kind of catch 22.
Don't show up late for your interview either.
If you want to get a job in the game industry, write a game. And this doesn't mean that you need to feel intimidated and like, oh my God, I need to do the full production value with all the art and all the monsters and all this and that. No, write a Tetris game. Write a game of Pong. Write a casual game. Casual games is a huge part of the market. It's just exploding right now. Write a cell phone game. Because by writing even a simple 4K game, you show that you can start a project, you can design it, you can work on it, and you can finish it. And that will put you ahead of 95% of the, probably 98% of the people that are applying. So Andrew, why don't you introduce yourself?
You have too much confidence in that other 2%. Yeah, 99% or so. I've been in the game industry for a few years now. Suckered into it in about 90 and have been staying around the electronic side of it since 92. Bet you want to hear what I'm saying? God, are you insane?
Posterity. For
good
posterity.
God, man. In my case, getting into the paper industry was as easy as finding people who didn't know as much what they should be doing as they should have and telling them that I did whether I really didn't. But it's changed a bit. For getting into the computer game industry, it was more getting drunk with people at the GDC and convincing them to do a company, and one of the people I'm doing that with is now rolling his eyes in the back. But it is kind of interesting because now I'm actually, as well as still designing games, I'm teaching game design at the Art Institute of Atlanta, and all the people are very interested now in how do we break in, what do we do, and a whole interesting different level because nobody had a game degree when I was coming through it. There was not such a thing. I considered my history and journalism degrees to be game degrees. My brother's in the industry. He considers his English and drama degree to be computer game degrees, and all learned programming on our own. But it is that dedication and that desire to do it that really matters. And what you see now in 95% of the ads for people in the computer game industry is one word, passion.
Passion.
Must have a passion for game.
Amen.
95% of the ads have that now.
Amen.
What it means, I still don't know.
Willingness to work long hours and not have a life. Yeah.
And burn out before you're 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you can show passion, that's your first way, and hopefully in a legal, socially acceptable way.
Go foot tapping.
I don't know. We have a lot of good people who have twitches. It's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Another way not to get into the game industry, say you want to start your own company, and you just have a really good idea. Not a good way to get into the industry. Starting a game company is starting a business, and you need funding. You absolutely have to have funding. Even if you're doing really simple, small, casual games, if you're going your own route and you're trying to do the whole thing where you're writing the game and you're producing the game, you're shipping the whole thing, you need tens of thousands of dollars for it, even for a tiny, tiny game. And for any kind of game that's going to be larger, I'd say a budget of $1 to $2 million, up to $20 to $50 million, depending on how big you want to go. There are a lot of people who somehow know how to get money. They go out there, they have what's called angel investors, people who are willing to give them millions of dollars without really having any kind of solid plan. And I see people all the time. It's like they all of a sudden got $5 million funding or $10 or $20 million. I'm like, give us
no game will ever appear.
Right,
no game will appear. In fact, this is the secret. She is giving you the secret to making a small fortune in gaming. It is to start with a large fortune.
I'm fairly well convinced that I've seen more money spent on development than brought back in revenues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Walking into large amounts of money, having large amounts of money, saying, oh, gaming, that would be a lot of fun. I should do this, and not actually having the technical knowledge or the rest of the skills that go along with that.
Gals of Two was actually the first Gals of Two game we ever got paid for at Stardock. All of our other publishers went bankrupt. So then we self-published Gals of Two.
Kiss of Death. Yeah, don't let the publishers know you're the Kiss of Death either when you come in. Oh, they just... Nope. Other reasons it didn't work out there.
No, it's just one
we're making too much money. That's why it couldn't work out.
It's one of those things, though, where you don't... Somehow, you know, the money just doesn't come.
Yeah. And if you do get an investor, be aware also that there's multiple rounds of funding. So just because they've kind of given you money to get started, make sure you have a really good plan on what you're going to do with that money. And then you're probably going to need another round of funding. And often you'll have that angel investor who may have put in like $2 or $3 million. And because it was fun, it was cool, they wanted to do a game. And then it wasn't so much fun. And then all of a sudden you don't get round two of funding. And I've seen many, many companies go under because of that.
You have to be very concerned about interference from those big angel investors. Yeah, they've thrown a couple million dollars in, but now they want control over everything, whether they have those skills or not.
That line is too curvy. Yeah.
That's a different panel, though. That's like entrepreneurship. Well, that's where I should be on the panel, but this is how not to get into the game industry, remember?
Starting a game company is getting into the game industry.
One interesting thing, in this town, two of the biggest groups in town are formed by people who generated a great deal of money in other areas, in other electronic areas, and have now started their own game companies as a result. And so one way to not get into gaming is to not be a multimillionaire.
Okay. There you go. All right. How not to get into the game industry if you're a programmer, okay? Don't learn C. Don't learn C++. Don't know your craft. When we hire a programmer, sometimes we'll hire people that are just brilliant programmers, people that just sit at home and know how to code. But we're getting more and more into the case of someone's really got to know their stuff. We're going to give them a test, and it's going to be a hard test, and they're going to have to pass it before we even consider talking to them. So it's different from the way it used to be 5 or 10 years ago when we would just kind of take anybody.
Now, you can be in games and not know C++, but you mean a very limited niche group, undeniably. For those groups, don't know Java and
you're
don't
right,
know how to handle Flash and
cell
don't
phones.
Know Torque. And, right?
And following the not path, you can be a programmer and know C++, but not know anything about the people who work around you, not know how the art pipeline works, not know how to work with the producer, not know how to QA something, and that will equally keep you out the door.
Right. One great way to not get into the industry is to be sure you know all these things as soon as you walk in the door.
Yeah.
Absolutely great way to stay out of the industry.
What would be a way to not get into the game industry for an artist? Anybody have advice there? Yeah?
Don't know multiple areas. Go in thinking you'll only have to be an environmental artist. You'll automatically just be a character artist. Don't have those other specialties. While you can get in knowing one branch of software, you can get in just doing Maya or 3D Max and go over to the others as need be. To not know how to handle other areas of the art side of the business is a sure way to stay out. You'll see the ads for environmental artists, for 3D artists, for modeler, for animator, whatever. But to not know the other areas is a sure way to handicap yourself from the beginning.
At Stardock, our art director is very adamant that the artist know how to hand draw. It doesn't have to be their best thing, but he thinks it's very important to have a solid foundation in traditional art skills, because if you're not able to draw, a character, then the thing that you model doesn't have quite the same feeling to it. You've just used your tools, and anyone can learn how to use a tool. So if you don't want to get into the game industry, just ignore hand drawing.
I would add to that, maybe you can get in as a talented artist, but then staying in, if you can't work on a team, if you can't fit in with the process, except that I'm going to make this model but somebody else is going to texture it, if you can't let go of something when it's done, if you get some artists really want to make something perfect and will spend months making that thing perfect. Well, in most game development schedules, you don't have that leisure. So also don't hit your deadlines.
And ignore all other art styles. Anime's all that matters, all you'll ever need to know. You'll work for Blizzard forever, just no fantasy and cartoon orcs. That's all you gotta know. Sure way to stay out.
It's even better if you mock the other styles.
Exactly, absolutely, absolutely.
There's probably something in there about how not to get in the game industry is just rely on your skills as a Warcraft guild leader. it's true. There was some article about someone who did get a job because they played Warcraft. It's like they were interviewing. It wasn't for the game industry. It was for some other industry. But they were interviewing, and the person who was interviewing them was also a Warcraft addict, and so it gave them the job because they played on the same server or something weird like that. But it's not going to help you in the game industry.
A lot of work gets done at that office.
Yeah. But you should be familiar with the different genres. If you try to get a job in a game industry and they say, okay, do you play any MMOs? And you go, what's an MMO? Probably not going to be helpful. The game industry is definitely not just MMOs. The multiplayer games are basically a small part, I would say, of the industry, even though it's probably one of the more publicized. Console games is a huge section of the industry. Casual games, rapidly growing section of the industry for a slightly different demographic. And there's also some very valid genres going on with games for kids and games for tweens and multiplayer games for tweens. And I'm not even sure how I would go about getting a job in, some company that was designing games for six-year-olds, but probably studying child psychology would probably be a help.
Or just being a marketing company. So many of those now are coming out of marketing firms, and a lot of them are being the ad games, the Coke
Adver games,
universe here and that sort of thing.
Well, don't forget the serious games and game-based training is an area that's certainly rising, especially in the area where I'm at from in Huntsville, Alabama, which is all DOD. It's growing fast.
What about for a game designer? What's a way to not get a job as a game designer?
Don't have any other skills. Don't know anything about code. Don't know anything about art. Just come in. You can put a level together. That's all that matters. They'll give you the resources. That's it.
Never make a mod.
Have no conception of what your great design ideal will take in terms of engineering hours.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat in a room where somebody says, oh, and we'll be able to do blah, 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 and think, that's going to take me 6 months to make that happen.
Now, I've been the guy pushing that out before. It's not me who's got to spend 6 months, so it's all right.
Don't understand state machines.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes on just having other skills.
Don't bother testing what you do.
Yeah.
Other people will test it. You don't have to.
Right. Right, and then when someone comes to you and says they want to change, argue with them.
No, absolutely. You had it right the first time.
Yeah. Those damn players, they're just not playing it right. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, because who plays with the shift key anyway?
I would add to that, don't understand your market, don't understand your users. Assume that you are the ultimate player and everybody wants to play the game that you want to play.
Assume they will have the biggest hardware, too.
Yeah.
And assume that the only people that will ever play your game are Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a big mistake.
Make sure you you design it so that all the art, all the text is in the art.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It can't be internationalized.
Yeah, bitmap art.
Yep, absolutely.
Bitmap fonts.
Yep. Yeah. And when you hire a translator, hire someone that's not a native speaker.
Either language that's involved.
Don't have to communicate with the investors.
Your team or anybody else, you have an ivory tower, stay in it.
Yeah. There's talking about the shift key, there was a story there that I was hearing about. In the United States, when people play, they'll play with like one hand on the keyboard and another hand on the joystick or something. But in Asia, they want to be able to play one-handed. And if a game requires two hands, they don't want to play the game because they want to play. They want to play, and they want to be smoking a cigarette or have the arm around the girlfriend or something while they're playing. So it's something that game designers need to be aware of, is these different styles of play in different countries.
In terms of internationalization, make sure that if you've got a strategy game, for instance, that China loses.
Yes. Put racial epithets.
Well, actually, we were approached long ago by a Japanese company to do a World War II Pacific War game. It's like we can't exactly change it around very easily so that the rising sun continues to rise. But that was their interest.
Mm-hmm. Right. We haven't had audio yet.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you do writing?
No.
There is a definite way to not get a job as a writer in the game industry. That's to try to get a job as a writer in the game
industry. Audio?
Audio, my comment there was simply going to be, don't blatantly copy somebody else's work that the producer can go and play the CD and show that you've blatantly copied somebody else's work.
Yes.
Mono works for everything.
Same goes for art, actually.
Yes. How not to get a job in the game industry. Copy art by some famous artist and submit it as your own.
It's happening coding, too,
or
but then
as
people
a
continue
student.
To work. Or by the
we
person who's interviewing you.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
Go.
Never had that.
There was a question or a comment from there? Or? Okay. Yeah, audio is actually really hard to get a job in the game industry right now because there's just so many people who do audio, and it's almost a joke at the game developer conference because it's
a million cards, a million CDs.
Yeah.
Now the flip side of that is if you're an audio programmer, the jobs are sweet. At least when I was at Electronic Arts, network programmers and audio programmers, we could never find any.
Hmm.
Isn't there a lot of stock audio that's used? Rather than getting actual audio designers, because I've played a lot of games recently where I can just go, I just heard that explosion from the other game, and it's the exact same wave file. Yeah. I've actually got two games where I pulled up my whatever Sony SoundForge, and they're the same file by two different companies.
And additionally, a lot of the audio people...
Repeat the question, sort of.
Oh, the question
or comment
was, isn't a lot of stock audio being used in games now? You'll hear the same sound in a lot of different games. And a lot of sound, the people who do the sound are actually using stock files and changing them somewhat to make them fit your game more appropriately. And nothing particularly wrong with that, as long as they really are making it fit your game and doing something nice and unique with it. So another way to not get a job in audio is to not pay attention to the game you're doing the audio for. They need an explosion, I'll give them an explosion. Doesn't matter if it's a nuclear bomb or a firecracker, I'll give them an explosion. So there will be a lot of back and forth with audio.
How not to get a job in QA. Play the game, find a bug, and then don't tell anybody about it.
That's
right.
Hard to catch,
don't
though.
Know how to write or communicate.
Exactly. The main part of PQA is having good writing skills, being able to logically and effectively get your point across in as few words as possible. Also in a critical way, but a non-insulting way.
This game sucks!
Which would lead me to say, if you're an artist, you can't be the sensitive artist, because everything you do, it's PQA's job to tear it apart, but in a constructive way. But I've run into many people who are way too sensitive at the most benign comments. But basically, your work's going to be torn apart on a daily basis and shoved right back in your face, reassigned to you, and you have to look at it. And you have to be able to take that day after day and just keep slogging on.
I'd say my favorite QA people at EA were the ones who really didn't like me. And there were at least five occasions where I'd call a QA person a liar. I tell them, if you want me to fix this, you got to prove it to me. And I was always wrong.
We love you.
But also on that, there's a good way to write bugs and there's a bad way to write bugs. Mm-hmm. There would be some I'd get that game crashes sometime.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's others like 25% of the time, if I go through this door, talk to this person, drop this item, then this effect happens. Those were great.
Yes, that's a good bug report.
Fix them.
They're still going to curse when they see the report.
I don't know how to phrase this as a don't, but when you are given the leeway to give game suggestions, in other words, there's a category of bug for what would you like to see in the game, don't get insane. Don't get stupid. The gas stations in space request is still one of my all-time favorite bug reports we got for a game where that did not at all apply.
There's also some judgment required in terms of where the game is in its development cycle. For example, if the game's there, the areas are in, the game design is done, the combat has been tested, and you're about a month away from Gold Master, and then someone says, hey, can't we put in a subway throughout the entire world, and it'll only take, you know, another month or so of adding art, and of course we'd have to completely retest the combat system. And so, no, bad idea. Bad idea. You're going to have the producer tearing their hair out. It's amazing that they can even hit the Gold Master date the first time around.
Hero Subway Journey.
And what's the saying? We can't push out Christmas is the thing. Wow. Sometimes you have a hard deadline and you can't push it. Otherwise, you're just not going to make the Christmas season. And that's what a lot of games shoot for.
This is sort of tangential. Going back to the initial how not to get into the industry is how not to find another job in the industry. My experience switching jobs was if you don't know somebody on the team, you can't actually get your resume onto a manager's desk. So the inverse of that would be if you know somebody, one of the testers, or somebody along the forums, or somebody who uses the same tool that you use, then you can actually get your resume on somebody's desk in a timely fashion.
Yeah. But a big don't is, don't make it public that you're looking for a new job in between milestones. Bad idea. And if a company's in crunch mode and you suddenly bail and go to another game company, don't be expecting that you're going to be finding a lot of other jobs after that, because word will get around.
Yeah. The industry is very small and very incestuous. Not really, by
hey, how you doing? Moved to West Virginia. See y'all.
In the sense that really there's a very finite number of people and they all know each other. And if you burn bridges, if you leave a team holding the bag, right, if you walk out with critical knowledge, people will remember that.
Yes.
Yeah. A definite don't is don't network. If you don't network, yeah, you'll have no problem. You're good enough as it is.
Game companies will beat a path to your door.
Absolutely. They're really seeking you. Yeah. It's a definite not.
Well, I have seen it happen. Dave Perry, who's done like Earthworm Jim and the Matrix Online games, he actually does do that at times. He'll go surfing the web and he'll look for someone who has a website, someone who's really, really good at what they do that isn't working in the game industry yet. And Dave will contact them and say, hey, do you want a job? So it happens sometimes, but it's the exception rather than the rule.
Question. A lot of the stuff you guys are bringing up is stuff that would apply to any profession, really, not just gaming.
Wow.
Is there anything that works in the normal professional world that doesn't work in the game industry?
Show up in a suit.
Yeah, really.
That's valid.
The comment was, show up in a suit as a way of getting into the game industry.
My pet peeve are people's resumes and cover letters, because I get these really boring, generic cover letters and resumes that they're straight out of, you know, like what I had in my class at Lawrence Tech for technical communications. So, I mean, they're telling you, like, this is the way you should do it. Well, it doesn't work for a game company, because the game companies have different priorities and they're going to want to see different things. And, you know, it's a different environment too. And so it's okay to show a little bit of personality in the cover letter. And most of all, you want to show interest in the company. So if you don't want to get hired, show no interest, right, or knowledge, yeah, of the company and, yeah, its products.
Right. Yeah, I've never seen an ad for a nuclear engineer that said must have a passion for atoms. Right. Whereas I will see that repeatedly. I think one major difference also with the gaming industry is that we are expected to jump in feet first and to take off running immediately. You might have a 2 weeks, a month to ramp up, but then you got to be going. Other industries, you can really have a year to slowly build your way into
training,
what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have that. The bandwidth for training new people is really not there. So a perfect don't is to come in expecting for them to train you, and if you have a lot of time to get your feet wet, because it's not going to happen.
I would categorically agree with that. If you're lucky enough to get into a small studio early on, then you're probably very undercapitalized, have no advancement path, and may die for lack of money. If you're jumping into a larger team, then probably the scope of the project is already slipping, and everything's already on fire, and they need you last week.
Yep. Another difference between game companies and regular corporate America, I would say, is hours worked. In a normal corporate job, people are going to come in, they might work a 9-to-5 or, flex time, 10-to-6 or something. But generally, someone going into a corporate job, they're going to be expecting about a 40-hour a week, and they're going to be asking questions in the interview about benefits and do I get the corporate car and those things. And in a game company, it's going to be, you only want to work 40 hours a week, and that's going to be like a big line through a lot of people, because game companies are going to be working on milestones. Things are on fire. They need something finished, and it's not going to be number of hours that someone puts in. It's, is the project done yet or not?
One of the other areas that differs with a lot of industries, certainly not all, but with a lot of areas, is you don't have the personal fiefdoms I've seen in a lot of corporate areas. You might have them, your team you're very protective of, and the work you do within your team, but within that group, no one can be overly protective of what they do. People have to be willing to take criticism, be willing to give feedback on what's going on, or else things will start to fall apart, and there has to be regular communication. In your standard Dilbert work environment, that is the direct antithesis to how things generally work. So the classic don't within the game industry, if you don't want to be hired, don't communicate with the other people you're dealing with.
I'm expecting to make a living for all those hours that I put in.
We'll give you stock options, though. Yeah. Also, don't comment code.
Yeah, programmer. Okay.
No, it was the don't comment code aspect. Okay. You're pointing.
Code is a language. Code comments itself.
Okay. Self-commenting code. Okay. In the gray shirt, yeah.
Zoom has the education and the skills. How competitive is the entry-level market?
Okay, so the question was, given the education and the skills, how competitive is the entry-level market? For which type of skill?
That's the big question.
For a game artist.
Okay. Anybody?
I actually just pulled up a bunch of these ads. I just pulled up a bunch of these ads on Tuesday to show to my class, because we're actually going over a lot of the entry level stuff. If you look, for instance, I think Gamma Sutra is the best bellwether of the industry at any one point in time. And you look at the ads there, you'll see five for position, small positions, three audio positions available, 20 level designer positions. It was 93 artist positions and 120 some programming positions. That seems fairly decent, but then you realize that the number of people looking at the artist position is probably about three times the number of people looking for the programming positions. Last thing I heard, there was a friend of mine was involved with the EA, one of the EA Florida groups, talking about they had just had an entry level position, art position, open up. 600 applicants, most of them fairly qualified. So the entry-level positions are definitely doable and definitely grabbable. There is a lot of competition going for them. Be able to show your stuff. Okay, well, here's the perfect don't. Don't look online for any other artist's portfolio to see what they've got and to see how you compare. A lot of artists have their portfolios online. A lot of people trying to break in have their portfolios online. Check them out. See where you are in relationship to them.
And make sure you have your own web page and that you show your work. If you're a game designer, show that you've designed something. Have a web page. Link to something that you've done.
I would say, though, if you do put up a web page, don't do it half-assed, because if the links are broken or it's just a plain background with
With a bunch of broken links. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we get that a lot, and it's just like, you know, you obviously didn't put the time into this. I mean,
yeah.
On the other thing also, if you don't want to get a job, convince whoever's looking at your portfolio that you've used pirated software in order to generate your content. You know, I'm a poor student, but I'm using Maya for everything.
And leave the watermarks in the image.
Ooh. Also, it's gone. I'll come back in a minute.
Don't show your best stuff first. Make them wade through a whole bunch of your crap concept art before they get to that really cool model you put together. They'll appreciate that.
Go ahead. Don't work in a parallel industry getting experience.
And don't send something that's finished. Send art that's sort of halfway done that you meant to finish, but you just didn't have time.
It'll look really cool when you're done.
Yeah.
You promise. You get a question there.
Uh-huh.
Building on that, I'm actually working in programming right now, but I'd like to get into the gaming industry. I'm working in programming on document management, which is not related, I guess. But so I've got some art skills and some, and I'm more programming than art.
Okay.
Is it more helpful to look for an art job and have programming skills on the side, or is it more helpful to look for a programming job and have art skills?
Where's your passion?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. What do you really want to do?
I really don't know. I think I enjoy the art more, but I can sit down for a lot longer. I guess I have more patience for the coding.
What are you better at?
Eesh.
Work on it.
Well, I'd love to say the art.
Okay.
But probably the programming.
Okay.
So.
The safe answer is that the programming gig is going to be the easier one to get, mm-hmm. but you can be frustrated with it within the first week, the first month. I mean, don't just let that be the deciding point for you. Is okay. it what you're going to want to end up doing?
Okay.
Yeah, the general rule of thumb is find out what you're good at, what's easy for you, and then work your butt off at it and get great at it. And then you will find work. You will find work.
I was just curious to know if there was a really a large amount of coding and programming in rigging.
In rigging or
in the rigging of models for characters or anything like that?
No.
No, rigging's all done in the program that was made, like Maya or Max. It's, you know, completely done by tools.
Being a great Max scripter or Maya scripter wouldn't hurt you, but I know plenty of very talented animators who don't know a lick of scripting.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how to phrase this as a don't, so I'll just say, but there is a premium on using the least amount of polygons in building a model.
Less than there used to be.
A lot less than there used to be, especially with all the paintbrush interest and all that. But yes, it is still there. Have that ability to go low poly.
Especially if you're on the console.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even there,
it depends on the platform, but yeah.
There's plenty of headroom on a 360 or PS3.
Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm starting to see on some of the websites is here's my high poly models and here's my low poly models. Mm-hmm. And here's the same model in both. Which I think is a pretty good idea.
Okay. Someone had a question that got passed to us about when an artist sends out art, should they copyright it when they send it out?
Well, it's automatically. You have an automatic copyright to it when you send it out. I wouldn't go waving that around. I mean, people aren't going to steal your art and slap it in their games because they want something specific for their work. You automatically own a copyright when you send it out. The work in your portfolio, in your... in your in your art book, that does belong to you and no one's really going to steal it. I've seen this paranoia all over the place. I don't want to show you my really good artwork in order to become an artist because you might steal it.
That's
a great don't. I really have seen it and that blows my mind. I'm not going to show you my best stuff and I want to come work for you anyway.
Yeah, and I've also seen the paranoia, I think, in game designers. They say, I don't want to send this to the company because they're going to steal my idea. Ideas are a dime a dozen. And the thing about getting a game out is who's going to do the work, who's going to take the design. And even coming up with an idea is not that valuable. We want someone who can take that idea, put it into a design document, write the 100-page design document. That's valuable. Coming up with the idea, not so valuable.
I'm sending things out, though. You do have to do some level of due diligence. There are shysters out there. There are people who walked into money, don't know how to make a game, and will take stuff. So
yes.
Be sure you're dealing with a reputable company.
Right.
Okay, well,
I have one more statement really quickly. That Scott has arranged a really good copyright seminar for the EFF track. So if you have interest in copyright, I strongly recommend going to that one.
It's tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I just wanted to check on something with particularly QA jobs. What are some of the good things to have to actually get into a QA job and do things like being a beta tester for other games? How much ahead does that actually put you?
If you're just passively betaing something like many people do, not
not much at all, but if you're actively posting on the forums, posting stuff in a clear and concise manner that the actual QA people can take and turn into something and write a real bug on, that would help being able to provide those links so someone could call that up before an interview or during an interview. I mean, that's helpful, but you'll get across in an interview whether someone can communicate well verbally. And you would also want to see that that translates into being able to communicate clearly in your writing also. It's very important.
Unless you're the QA lead's best buddy, you're still not really going to get very far unless you have at least those passive beta testing positions. You got to show something at this stage. There are just so many opportunities out there for you not to have it. It's insane. You have to either really know somebody or shows you have some other real good skill set for them to bring you QA if you don't have free beta experience at this stage.
Hang out on the forums as far as if you're going to do something. But that's a good way to get in because the developers will know you. And when they see that you're posting really good beta reports or bug reports, then they might start sending you test builds and stuff. And, I mean,
you get invited to close testing, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's talking from an engineering standpoint here and the bugs that I've seen, it certainly wouldn't hurt to have some idea of how a game is structured. You know, what does a level look like? What's it made up of? What are the different systems running the engineering? What are the different systems on the art side? So you have some clue where a bug might be coming from.
How not to get a QA job. Say that you get bored if you play a game more than once.
Yeah. Flame the lead designer because they did such a crappy job. Or in a spin on an incident that actually happened with us, go up to the publisher and start slamming all the products they've done.
Pretty much in any game job, going on public forums and saying bad things about companies will prevent you from having their favor.
Yeah. If you're posting a lot in the forum, you want your post to be the kind that the developers love to read. You want them looking for your name and going, ooh, what did so-and-so say? And it's either going to be a really good bug report, or they said something insightful, or they said something nice. They complimented me. They said something flattering about the team. That's actually a pretty strong method to get your name noticed.
Oh, I'll back that up. And on the flip side of that, then there are plenty of people who will bash games and say horrible things for no good reason. That is really demoralizing, being on the development side.
Some of these don'ts that you guys keep talking about, some of them thinking maybe these are mistakes maybe you made yourself or something. There's stories behind them, and I'm just kind of wondering if there are any you'd like to share.
I've never made a mistake, no.
Next question.
I thought I did once, but I was wrong. Right.
Well, I don't really count because I just, like, you know, fell into the game industry. I started out as an intern, and I just, you know, kind of went on from there.
Yeah, we should each talk about how we got into the game industry. We should share that, okay.
But one thing that really annoyed me was, like, this one guy who emailed me, and he made, like, two games on his own. And he was applying for a game developer position. And I wrote back to him, I said, well, I'm sorry, we're not hiring any entry-level game developers right now. And he says, well, I don't think I count as an entry-level game developer. And I'm like, okay, delete the email.
Yeah.
What about writers? You've talked about programmers and artists, but I mean, there are story arcs usually embedded in these games, and someone has to write those as well. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, I think you weren't here when I made my one comment about how not to get a job as a writer, and that was to try to get a job as a writer in the industry. It is certainly more possible now than before, and there are people who are doing it. And actually making livings doing so, and some of them actually have some talent. But I think right now, a lot of those people are either getting in because they had previous game experience in other areas, or they get in because they know people and have writing talent.
That's the question, is, where do the writers come from that they're not?
Hell, in my experience.
I mean, I don't read anyway, but over all of that.
The programmers.
at our company, PQA has been a pretty fertile grounds for writers and quest designers.
I think Immutable Realms, our writers came from the cartoon production world, Saturday morning cartoon production. The writer I've got in the group now within the Department of Defense came from television also. And I want to say, and I'm not sure about this, the writers we had at EA came out of film and like writing novels, that kind of writing. But none of them came out of the game industry.
But in contrast to that, game writing is still very different from other kind of writing. And folks who come out of those novel backgrounds and like have to really break a lot of their old habits to do game writing effectively, it is a different technique. It's still an area I think is growing and changing in the industry. I don't think there's anyone real hard set way on into it. Be able to be flexible, be able to write interactive is very tricky for many people. Be able to write short and concise. I think Hemingway would have been a great game writer. Proust, much less so. Dostoevsky, probably not at all. But
writing a choose-your-own-adventure book might be good practice.
Yeah. No, seriously. Yeah.
All right, I have a question. What kind of an education do game industry employers look for, and are there any particularly desired schools?
Again, it depends on which field that we're talking about.
Specifically art.
Art. There's a few good schools that are getting a really good rep in the industry. Savannah, SCAD, excellent industry. Look here, the Art Institute of Atlanta.
Not quite as much, but the other art institutes are doing all right. We're getting there, too.
Yeah. What about DigiPen?
DigiPen's got a good rep.
Okay.
But what you will not see, going again through the most recent Gamma Sutra Wanted ads, maybe 1 in 4 even mentioned a college degree, and it says a plus. Very few people who've been through the game design programs have made it anywhere of note in the companies, not because they're not talented, because they just haven't been, those degrees haven't been around that long. So the industries aren't looking for those degrees yet. In another 4 years, when more of these graduates are out and involved, I think it will be, you'll start seeing this more emphasized in the ads.
But do you think it's a good place to get experience with the programs that would be used, such as Maya and...
Since I'm teaching at one, I certainly think there's a strong plus to it. But I will also say that you can learn a lot of this on your own through dedication or with a skilled group of friends or in evening classes, not necessarily devoting 3 to 4 years of your life to doing it. You want to have that kind of intensity and focus to it. But right now, the industry is not requiring you to have a degree in art to do it.
Great. And Maya and 3D Studio Max, definitely.
You still want to go out and get some life drawing in there. You do want to know how to draw and how the anatomy works, how bodies work, all that sort of
thing. And how to make textures to wrap around 3D models. That's a big thing right now.
In general, you really don't have to have a game-specific degree. I mean, we have people at Stardock who have English degrees, and they're like programming. So, I mean, you just really have to be good at what you do, and in some ways, having the game-specific degree can actually hurt you because if you allow that to limit yourself. I mean, you always want to push your boundaries.
If you're a student anywhere, you can go to places like Academic Superstore and get drastically reduced prices on Maya and 3D Max. And if you're serious about getting in, you should drop the $300 and get one of them, and work through the Unreal Ed tutorials and know those tools well.
Yeah, we had an artist who worked at a local store before he came to work for us. He was just a sales clerk, and he overheard some Simutronics people in the store talking about how we really wanted to hire somebody that had experience with 3D Studio Max. So the clerk, they were selling it at the store. He swiped a copy from the store, took it home, taught himself, made some models, sent them to us, and told us what he had done. And we hired him. The passion.
If you want to work for Simutronics, 5-figure discount, get busy.
He gave it back.
After you gave him a free
I would disagree with Carrie a little bit. Just different companies I've worked for where much more on the engineering side than the art side, having a real degree does kind of matter. I need to know if I'm hiring a programmer that they know C++, they've been doing it for 3 or 4 years and are highly skilled. They know all of the other basic logic processing, all the 100, 200, 300 level classes that somebody just says, I want to program a game and walks in, doesn't have those basic skills.
just don't have a sociology degree.
At the same time, though, the person who has a really crappy demo with a computer science degree is going to look like nothing against the person who has an English degree and has a really awesome demo.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's what you've done. It's not what you've learned. It's what you've done. Right.
Having a degree certainly isn't enough by itself.
All right. You've already touched on this a little bit, and I know the competition is going to be pretty stiff in the gaming industry in general, but are there any positions that are that you're particularly usually looking for, anything more in demand than another position?
In terms of art at Simutronics, we're looking for people that not only know how to use 3D Studio Max, but can also make the textures. And by texture, I mean when you see, say, a cow walking along, you've got the two core parts of it. You've got the 3D model of the cow, and you've got the hide of the cow, which is actually like a flat sheet of art that is then wrapped around the 3D model so it looks like a cow walking along. And that ability to make that texture that wraps to a model is something very specific. It used to be that we would hire texture makers and we'd hire people who made 3D models. Now we're really looking for people that can do both.
I would say the two that I'd be most interested in are technical art director type positions, because the people who really know the art and really know why each of these constraints matter and how to express those in Max or Maya so that they show up the right way when your assets hit runtime, those people are, in my experience, hard to find. And the other would people who are solid game, I don't know if project manager or producer is the word, but I feel like there's a real problem in the industry, and this is what's led to a lot of the work, excessive hours, that sort of thing, from a lack of project management skills.
Amen.
One thing, I talked about the Gamma Sutra ads, but if you are interested in going working in the industry, look at the specific company websites for companies you want to work for, and you'll see other positions listed there. One thing I'll see on almost, I'd have to say, about 75% of the company sites, there'll be a constant list up there for programmers. Yeah. Even if they're not hiring, they want your resume in there because they will be soon.
Right. Yeah. Programmers, especially programmers who can deal with 3D, the mathematics behind 3D programming. That's something we need.
And even if they don't have anything on the website, if you like the company, you really want to work there, send it in anyway. Because if you look really good, chances are they'll find something for you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard to find good people, and good companies will take the good people when they can find them.
I'll agree with that. If you send us, even though we're not officially hiring, if you send us a resume and you really want to work at our company and you've got the skills, we will make an opening for you.
Or we'll at least hunt you down when the opening appears.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of the the entire discussion really has been about the technical aspect of designing a game, producing a game, coming up with ideas. But the industry, has the business side to it as well. Can you talk a little bit about the maybe management jobs, how you actually get to the taking a game from a product standpoint, not necessarily polygon counts and the amount of RAM you need, but taking something from a product to the shelves. Mm-hmm. How does that process work? And even, God forbid, the legal side.
Speaking for myself, and it's going to vary again if you're in a small company or in a large company, but I would say in larger companies, I would go in as some sort of like a junior level producer, or perhaps even as a level designer, and then show that you can manage projects and manage a team and work your way up the production ladder from there.
The larger companies have need for all of those things. They need standard sales, they need standard marketing. The larger ones have their own legal departments, though for, like, Take-Two, all their major cases, they're still contracting out to big firms, but they've got a big legal term in-house, a team in-house at this point. But the need is there. One of the things I kind of feel sorry about is the industry doesn't really look for people who really know games to fill those areas. They still seek from traditional streams to fill that. I don't know if having a strong knowledge of games is really an asset in searching for those jobs. I haven't seen it be an asset at this point. I wish it were.
Let's say I would agree with both of them that the two paths I've seen were somebody with a lot of money comes in, starts a game company, assumes management, isn't necessarily skilled at that. And the other at EA, there was the path up through the ranks sort of went designer, producer, senior producer, then executive producer when you started having real power.
Okay. another thing about how not to get into the game industry. When you interview, say that you're looking for a job that you can be in for the next 20 years. Most game companies, it's a very short tenure. I would say the average tenure, there are exceptions, but people generally move around every 18 months, every couple years. Game companies will hire people based on a project. Mm-hmm. And when the game ships, then they lay a lot of people off, and then you're looking for work again. So once you're in the company, you need to keep your skills up to date. You need to be current, because you're going to be going through the entire process again in a couple of years. You don't want to be joining the game industry if you're looking for a long-term, stable profession.
But don't go in telling them that you plan to leave in 18 months.
Also, tell them you want to work from home.
Which there are some that do it, especially for artists. They're very specific. We will hire people that work from home on occasion, but usually we want people who are there so that we can interface, so we can have the meeting, so we can have the brainstorming sessions or the yelling sessions.
Don't tell them you only want to work from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Understand that you will be working from 10 a.m. to 6 a.m. anyway.
Is there another question?
Yeah, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
To touch on what the young woman was talking about earlier about the colleges, I was wondering if any of you guys had heard about Full Sail.
Yes.
We hired someone from Full Sail this year.
Really? What program was it in? Or was he from or she from?
He was in the four-year program for the bachelor's degree, just game development.
Okay. My second question was, if... say, for example, you want to get into a game industry and you want to do modeling, but you get a job offer, say, doing lighting and shading. Is it a good idea to take that job and then try to work your way into modeling? Or do you find yourself, once you get into lighting, that you kind of get stuck there doing that particular type of work?
I'd say take the job.
Experience is always good.
People in the game industry inevitably have to wear a lot of hats, and this is small studio or big studio. When even a small milestone crunch hits, if you can do a skill, people will be grabbing you to practice that skill.
Right. In Simutronics, we've had situations where we have a very organic structure, but say if a producer leaves and we need a product manager, often we'll look around and say, okay, who wants to be the product manager? And we've taken people straight out of customer service and put them in charge of a major product. It's based on need.
But this does go back to what we said before. A, do you want to do lighting? Do shadows matter to you? And B, is it a company you want to do it for?
Now, I should also say that once we put them in charge of it, then they're going to be tested to see can they do the job. That just because they have the product manager job doesn't mean they're going to keep it for longer than a month or two. But the Peter principle may still come into effect, and they may end up getting replaced pretty quickly. But it is an opportunity. Okay, next question.
So my question relating to the programming and development aspect, are there any areas of specialization in programming that are sort of in high demand and any that are sort of not so much in demand right now?
I'd say specializations are in demand, and being a general game programmer is also in demand.
Being a programmer is in demand.
Yeah. 3D, being able to program with working with 3D art is in demand. There's a debate in our own company about the whole idea of software architecture, and we have some programmers that before they start programming something, they want to design out the entire code, what's it going to look like, where the different modules are going to flow. And we have other programmers that are just going to dive in and they're going to start coding, and it's just going to grow, and oh yeah, we'll organize it later. And both methods can work depending on what someone does. The organic programmers may find it very frustrating to architect because they just want to get their fingers into the code. And the architects find it very frustrating that people are already coding without knowing where they're going with it. So there's no one clear answer to it, but some companies will probably lean one way or the other.
And in some sense, both approaches are right.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with, you want to prototype a lot of things right up front, dive right into the code in order to mitigate risk, figure out what you can and can't accomplish on a given iteration of hardware, on a given iteration of tools. You also have to recognize that this year's code base gets to use next year, gets to use the following year, and if you haven't architected it well up front, you're going to have problems later. So there's a mix. And this is more than just game industry argument between the old software development lifecycle and then feature-driven development or Scrum or some of the newer approaches. It's it's a battle.
Yeah. And as we were comparing game industry with non-game industry, I've seen in the corporate world, they're more likely to be architecting things. If they have enough budget, they may be planning this huge thing and maybe spend a year figuring out what they're going to do before they even write a single line of code. And I've never heard of a game company doing that. They're on a much shorter cycle.
Okay, going back to things people should know getting into the game industry. I guess this is the easiest way I can understand it. If you could create the perfect person for you to hire, and you could give them like skill points in three programs.
Okay.
The three programs you would want your dream person, your dream employee to have, what three programs?
And again, are we talking programmer, art, business? Where are we talking?
Let's say 3D art and programming, like Starduck does, where they've got people that mix up not so much very specific, like EA or Bungie.
Well, for artists, use Maya, Max, and I'm trying to remember what they use for textures now, because I think they were using vector-based programs, because Paul uses Corel Draw, but I think that some of the artists use Illustrators. And then programmers, you need to know Visual Studio, usually. Pretty much it, yeah. Yeah. If you know the compiler, because you can learn how to use other things like VTune or, there's a bunch of different bug tracking and, performance programs out there.
I would agree with Carrie on the Max and Max or Maya, depending on the studio.
One or the other. If only have three skills to pick from.
Yeah, some image tool, be it Photoshop or Corel Draw or even GIMP, depending on where you're going, what their budget is. And I would add I've really got to go for four. You've got to have some scene building tool, an Unreal Ed or use Renderware Studio or something of that sort. And then also the project management tools. You've got to be able to use a Perforce or an Alien Brain. So, you've got to coordinate with all of the other artists, all of the other engineers, all of the other designers, and not just be throwing stuff out on the network, throwing stuff on a hard drive, because you'd actually be hurting the process.
Yeah, for myself, I'd probably break up in terms of really assigning it as like a character sheet. I'd probably say about a third of the points I'd assign to actual skill at the art programs, and about a third of them I'd put into some more personal traits. For example, reliability. That can they do what they say they're gonna? Are they honest? Their ability to work on a team. I'm going to be giving a lot of points to that. And then I'm probably going to assign the other points into things like we talked about, passion, that they want to do for it, and also what their experience level is. Am I hiring a level one designer? And also ability to learn. I'm going to assign points to that stat as well.
You're constantly climbing a hill, especially in the technical side. You're always climbing a skill, climbing a hill, rather. The skills I picked up a year ago, I've got to be replacing for the following year. DirectX 10 is out now. I knew the Xbox, now the Xbox 360 is out. I've got to learn those skills. Yeah. It never ends.
And notice that I did not put points to willing to work cheap. I think in the game industry there is a willingness to pay people what they're worth.
And perhaps a special feat where they can gorge on Mountain Dew and pizza even if they are paying people.
I had two quick questions. One of them was just a curiosity of mine. Is anybody doing game development using Lightwave? Because actually that was one of the earliest 3D programs and out there for personal computers and more entry-level kind of things. And the Lightwave object format actually became very pervasive for a number of years. I was wondering if any game industry is actually doing their development in Lightwave.
My group, one of our guys does a lot of modeling in Lightwave, just building the meshes because he likes the modeler, but then everything goes into Max.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other one was on the programming side, is there much use of extreme programming techniques in the gaming industry?
Well, this gets back to the... Locke and I were both talking about there.
Yeah, we've used extreme. Yeah.
There's extreme programming, there's feature-driven development, there's Scrum. They're all kind of related to each other as highly iterative approaches to code development, and I think absolutely people use those. We used Scrum almost exclusively working on Wish, and it was very effective.
Was it like an agile, like a
it's an agile approach.
A modified waterfall process.
Well, it's a high, like I said, a very highly iterative process. So
Scrum is a bit different from the traditional waterfall, even a modified waterfall. But I bet you had a pretty experienced team that worked together before.
We did.
Yeah, you can't Scrum just with a new team and folks don't know what they're doing.
Andrew, I want to make sure that you mention the convention in the first weekend of October.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, sir. I was going to do my plug at the end, but people have already been walking out.
Atlanta will be having its first computer game convention since we had E3 here. It is called the Southern Interactive Entertainment and Gaming Exposition, SIEGE. Speakers currently include Johnny Wilson, Ian Bogost, Sam Lewis from Cartoon Network, Marcus Matthews, Celia Pierce, Ken Leitner. Haven't got Jeff on it yet. Bill Bridges from White Wolf is now doing their MMO. We have Chris Klaus from Kineva is coming on board at this stage. Just signed up a bunch of other folks. Brenda Brathwaite just agreed to come. Got a great lineup of speakers, great lineup of panels. 3 days, October 5th to 7th. I've got a ton of flyers up here, which I'm very glad to distribute around.
Okay. So this will be your first one this year?
This will be the first one this year. Okay. A lot of good backers, a lot of good involvement, and discount registration goes on until the 10th.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
What other conferences do people recommend that are good for someone who's looking into the game industry to get into? I would have recommended, I mean, E3 is pretty much gone at this point.
GDC still has a huge hiring tent, don't they?
Yep, job fair at GDC, Game Developer Conference. It's a good idea to join the International Game Developers Association, the IGDA. Especially, there's probably going to be local chapters in different cities.
The GGDA is the local one here, Georgia Game Developers Association. I think we have our website on here. Yes, we do, ggda.org. Actually, the name of the group, not the not their website.
Is that associated? Is that associated with the IGDA, or it's a separate thing?
Yes and no.
Yeah, the Austin Game Conference, mm-hmm. which is actually happening
this week.
Yeah, this week is a good one to go to. Just kind of go in, meet people, network. There's usually some sort of a student price registration to get in for people that are looking for work or don't necessarily have the funding for the more expensive tickets. And another question that got passed to me, if anyone wants to talk about, is what kind of pay is out there for entry-level artists, QA people, writers, coders?
The magazines are all inflated.
there's also coast-to-coast discrepancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, do not expect West Coast pay, East Coast.
Can we just raise the minimum wage?
Wait, you're saying someone gets minimum wage.
You also have to look at it as not just, you know, what are you making as a salary, is what are you actually making per hour? Right? Which can be considerably more depressing when you start dividing.
I think most places, entry is still 30s and 40s.
Are you counting benefits or not?
Benefits?
No one counts benefits in a paycheck.
You want to talk
entry about for PQA in the Raleigh-Durham area is not 30s and 40s. It's considerably lower than that. And a lot of people do the temporary staffing where you're only getting paid hourly, you know, maybe $10 an hour to start off.
I think when I was at EA, we were paying
$15 an hour to Epic.
Red Storm was, well, they paid everyone different there.
Are you Red Storm?
Funcom now.
All right. So you're over there in Morrisville.
Yeah. In Durham now. We're in Fayetteville Road in Durham now.
One thing, though, when you start out, it's like at Stardock, my boss doesn't necessarily offer a whole lot of money for an entry-level position because we have to spend a lot of time training the entry-level positions. And so then, like, we have found that, you know, if we hire them in at a higher rate, then those people will leave after 2 years and go on to like Ensemble or someplace else after we've just gotten them trained. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you might want to be willing to put in the time, you know, even if it's not looking like the numbers you want.
Of course, the flip side of that is if you ask for less, you'll get paid less.
If you do go West Coast and get a higher salary, you will have a higher associated expenses.
But considerably.
You're but also most likely to get laid off, though, if you make less. Just
Yeah. And I would say in the game industry in general pays less for a given job than the corporate world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're looking just to make money, game industry is not what you want to do.
Game developers make $5 to $10 on the box if they don't publish it themselves. So, I mean, when it comes to the cost of, like, the development, you know, there's very little profit a lot of the time.
Well, that also has to do with what market you're going after, what studio you're at. Mm-hmm.
We got a question next.
Okay, question.
Okay, you brought up the corporate. What would you say to... just on the programming aspect.
I'm confused. Where's the... Scott has the mic, so whoever has the mic should be asking. Okay, there we go.
Just on the programming aspect, what would be the big differences between working for a gaming company and working for a corporation?
Yeah. On the programming side?
Broad.
Well, I think one of the things I've rather believe in the gaming industry, one of the great things about being a coder and is you're always working on something no one's really done before. Mm-hmm. It is always going to be something new and intellectually stimulating, even if you're tearing your hair out at the same time.
As a corporate developer, your life will be bug fixes.
The customers are very different, too.
Yeah, I already do that.
Yeah, and the end result. I mean, when you're working in the corporate environment, the final piece of code may be something that the public will never see. It's going to be internal to that corporation, maybe proprietary, it may be secret. I mean, if you're working for the government, whereas when you're working on a game, it's something that's going to be on shelves. Or it might be on the internet, but it's generally something that you can show the box to family, and there's a different level of pride. Not saying that people who work in the government and in the corporate world aren't proud of what they do. It's just more difficult for them to show it to the general public.
Hey, Scott, that was the last question, wasn't it? No more
questions. We're done. You get sociology.
I was just going to say, I worked in corporate for like a year before I got in the games industry. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that threw me away from it was I was working in, for the government. And the end customers actually didn't want what we were writing. It was too much.
My friends who are programmers say that all the time. Like, the customer will come like halfway through and say, you know, like, you need to change this completely.
Why are you building this?
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly what you
expect. Yeah.
It wasn't even that. They didn't want the product at all.
It's happened in the game industry as well. Multiple times we've coded an entire game for a customer, and then meaning a client, and then that client, their company went out of business or they got acquired and they re-examined their priorities, and all of a sudden this game that we just put a year and a half or 2 years of work into suddenly became shelfware, which is, I agree, it's extremely demoralizing, but it happens.
So as a programming job, everything is project work for, you know, they lay you off at the end. Do you guys switch industries regularly, or do you just move a heck of a lot?
Well, I mean, there are some cities where they're very focused on the game industry. And basically, when you're switching a job, it means you're walking across the street to a different company, literally. So Austin has many, many game companies. The Northern California area has many game companies. Chicago, New York City. It's pretty easy.
That's an argument for working in one of the high-density cities or working for a high-density studio. Go work for an Activision or EA where this project ends. There's another one down the hall.
And we've a bit overemphasized the transitory nature of the jobs within this industry. I know Alanka will leave.
Yeah, I have one living on my couch.
I know that Alanka leaves Simutronics every week or so. How long now?
Since 1990. Yeah.
Okay, you can have a job apparently for more than a year.
Yeah, it's possible.
If you're in St. Louis.
Yeah. We have other game companies in St. Louis.
There are a lot of people
who
stay with their companies for a long time. You'll be surprised.
If you want stability, you fix bugs. If you want a cool job, you write games.
I suppose if you're in a place like Michigan, which has like a brain drain, it's probably easier to keep a job at a game company because, you know, who are you going to get to replace?
Yeah.
Who's going to move to Michigan in the winter?
There is that.
California.
Okay. Is there any glamour left in the industry at all, or has it all just become an industrial grind?
Us.
I have fun every day, and... you know, for all the people who whine on the forums and stuff, there's, you know, that one person who takes the time to say, you guys made a great game, and, you know, or like, you know, you get the stories of, like, teacher, I'm showing this game to my kids at school because, you know, it, you know, helps them learn strategy and stuff, and, you know, so, yeah.
If you don't think there's still glamour left in this, think about the fact that in the past, I think it's 3 years, the Atlanta area has had 9 colleges introduce game design degrees. This is the hottest new area out there. The demand to be in it and the demand to be a part of it is extreme. I mean, the glamour, we've been in the trenches for way too long. We have seen the underside, the seedy, nasty underbelly.
We have caused the seedy.
We have caused the seedy, nasty underbelly. But outside, it is still, there's still strong desire.
Yeah, the game industry, what's the number? The game industry is making more money in the United States than the movie industry. It's a massive, massive market.
What the game industry will eventually reach. I mean, what EA and everybody else is still looking at is when they can grab that serious games market, get that close corporate games going. Yeah. They look at $13 billion a year now, and that's chicken feed compared to what they want to be doing. Yep. 40 billion, 50 billion, 100 billion in 10 years.
I mean, any job is going to have its good days and its bad days. And the trick is finding a job where you have more good days than bad days. But I have to say, speaking as a game designer, I've seen over and over, I'm sitting on a plane, I'm in an elevator, or I just chat with someone in the shopping mall, and they say, oh, what do you do? Oh, I make games. And you're like, ooh. And so, yes, there's still quite a bit of glamour there.
Although I almost got kicked off a jury because they looked at me really weird when I said I make computer games.
A big bonus for working in this. Big bonus.
No jury.
Yeah.
Philosophy or journalism, too.
Yeah.
I think that's actually the same thing.
The Venn diagram is just one circle.
Right. So I wanted to ask everyone here on the panel, how did you get into the game industry? Why don't we start with Nathan?
30 seconds or less.
I had gotten my degree in computer engineering, did a senior project with a guy who happened to fall into a spot in the game industry, and he called me one day and said, hey, you want to come work for a game company? I said, sure.
So, right.
So contacts and relevant technical experience.
I lost my job as a digital photographer. I did a little brainstorming and said, what do I really love in life? And it was games at the time. I was playing a lot of MMOs. So I read some articles on it about how to get into the industry, start in PQA, started working at Red Storm as a temp employee in PQA, and then moved to a permanent position at Funcom. And that's the story.
That was in the late 90s, though, right?
That was the early 2000s.
Okay. Late 90s, early 2000s. It's a little harder now, but.
As I said before, I started out as an intern. I found out about the internship because my mom knew someone who was friends with Stardock's lawyer, and Stardock happened to be looking for interns at the time. And I don't know, might have helped on a girl, but.
How did I get into the industry? I think that I walked under a ladder, broke a mirror, killed a leprechaun, something along those lines. I got into the computer game industry because I'd been in the role-playing game industry. And getting to the role-playing game industry, however, came because of writing ability and, really importantly, an ability to meet deadlines, which the company which I went to work for had no ability at. And the fact that I had come out of journalism and was used to hitting deadlines on a daily basis was a massive improvement for the company, kept the company alive and made it grow like it did. They were missing deadlines like you wouldn't believe up until that point in time. So coming in with the skill sets that they really needed in order to survive, and then that transformed into me going into computer games as well.
Mm-hmm. My own path was very much the small company path. I was originally a legal secretary in Los Angeles, and I was playing the early games on CompuServe and Genie, the General Electric Network for Information Exchange. And Genie, yeah.
Prodigy was the best.
Yeah.
Still hot.
Yeah. And so I was really into the game Gemstone 2 on Genie, and then I was a beta tester for Gemstone 3, and then there was a convention I was working in Los Angeles at the time, then there was a convention in St. Louis so the people who played the game could meet the people who wrote the game. There was a total of, I think, about 10 of us that went out to St. Louis, very small convention, but I met the game developers there, and I met some of the other players. I went back to Los Angeles. I thought about it really hard, and You know, 30 days later, I quit my job in LA. I moved to St. Louis, and I helped the CEO of Simutronics, who up to that point had been running the company out of his bedroom in his parents' home, and we moved it to an apartment loft. And he and I, we basically were just typing as fast as we could. And I think I got into, I'd already done some programming. I designed some little games in college. I only went to college for about a year. But at one point, I was sitting around, and the CEO, David Whatley, there had been some bug in the game. There was something that about a graveyard gate that wasn't working right. And he said, hey, fix that, will you? And I'd never done anything in the scripting language, but I sat there and I figured it out. And then once he saw I could do things, he kept throwing more and more things at me. And within 6 months, I was running the product. And that gave the CEO time to write a new game, CyberStrike, which won the award for Online Game of the Year. And then we just kept growing and growing from there. So that was my path, entrepreneur path.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So on that note, shall we end it? All right. Thank you all very much for coming.